Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, so we didn't really get into this too much yesterday, well, at all on the show yesterday, with so many things to talk about. Plus, I wanted to kind of read more reactions that were coming in. Certainly our friends in Butte listening right now, used guys in Butte, America, could give us some insight here. But got a story on our Montana Talks website right now. I saw our friend Peter Christian out of Missoula put a story together. He interviewed former Governor Roscoe. He also interviewed, let's see, who else did he interview for that story? University of Montana President Seth Bodnar. But yeah, former Democrat Congressman Pat Williams passed away this week in his upper 80s. And, you know, I never knew too much about Pat Williams because I really didn't get to really getting involved in Montana politics until like the late 90s. So some of you guys who are involved and in kind of, you know, more embedded in things prior to that, give us your insights here. But my one interaction with Pat Williams was when I was a student at the University of Montana back in the early 2000s. And he came and talked to the class. Can't remember if it was a poli sci class or a journalism class, probably a political science class. But that's where he really talked about this concept of Montana being a purple state, you know, and of course in 2000 Republicans won big, nearly swept all the statewide offices. But then, you know, after 2004, that's when the Democrats started clawing back and then eventually taking over almost all of the statewide offices. But yeah, I remember back then, you know, Pat Williams, of course, a likable guy, a personable guy, a charismatic guy, is pretty much anybody who's going to get elected to an office like that would be. And apparently he's the longest serving member of Congress from Montana. Now, from a statewide perspective, I think Denny Rehberg still holds the title as the longest serving statewide member of Congress. But from a congressional district perspective, it would be Pat Williams. But yeah, certainly a likable guy, charismatic guy. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting how he had described Montana, not as a red state or as a blue state. Because that back in the 2000 election is when you had the big maps come out that showed how George W. Bush just swept the entire country. It was a sea of red, kind of like the Trump elections, just with these pockets of blue, these little islands of blue. And so everybody was focused on red states versus blue states. And so he talked about Montana being a purple state, which was completely accurate. I mean, he was totally spot on. But I wonder now I wonder... This is my thought on Pat Williams, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong here. I think Pat Williams was able to straddle this kind of what Denny Rehberg referred to as an unholy alliance of the Democrat Party between big labor and the big environmental groups. Because really, the two interests do not align. The environmentalists have shut down labor union jobs, et cetera. The two interests, but somehow that is the base of the Democrat Party. And I feel like Pat Williams was able to straddle that base. He was able to straddle the line between big labor and big enviros. And that's something that no Democrat can truly do anymore, any longer in Montana. I think it's part of the reason why Montana now is and hopefully remains a red state.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunny skies across the area today, there's a slight chance for a shower storm in the afternoon. High temperature readings, meanwhile, range from 83 in Bozeman to the upper 80s in Billings. For tonight, with mainly clear skies, temperatures will drop back off to about 51 in Bozeman to near 60 in Billings. That will see partly to mostly sunny skies Saturday, with highs climbing in the low to mid 80s. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm Paul Trombley.
Securing America.
A Wednesday House Oversight Subcommittee hearing focused on the National Guard's Strategic Partnership Program, one that many may not have heard of, but has a global reach. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Global Partnerships, Christopher Momo.
It is a simple yet effective concept. pairing a state or territory's National Guard with a partner nation to foster long-term, mutually beneficial relationships while enhancing joint military capabilities and readiness in combination with other authorities.
Major General William Edwards of the National Guard Bureau outlined the program's growth.
What began in 1993 and with 13 nations in Eastern Europe after the fall of the Soviet Union has grown to 115 countries across every geographic combatant command.
Momo says as a result,
this extensive reach makes the SPP a critical component of the United States national security framework.
Thereby, he adds, making America safer. Kevin Uretsky, Fox News.
Hey, Clay, if there was a summer camp for critical thinking, we'd be the chief counselors. Those jellyheads in June would be intellectual warriors by August. Be a lot of fun, too. Some Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure references thrown in.
This podcast, like a daily dose of that, minus the campfires, archery, and pranking the girls.
The bona fide boot camp for critical thinking. You can get in on it for free at the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search our names, Clay and Buck, listen, and subscribe.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, hey, if you guys have some insight or some thoughts on former Democrat Congressman Pat Williams, please call in. You know, I thought maybe I should reach out to, you know, former Congressman Rick Hill to get his take. Rick Hill, of course, followed then as the next member of Congress, Rick Hill, a Republican. Then filled that seat in Congress. So back, got a little history here, I guess. So if you guys remember, we did a New Year's Day special, what was it, a couple years ago before the big Senate race here in Montana, and we had a former state senator John Brendan out of Scobie, and then our friend Greg Franks from the Summit Cigar Lounge, and he used to work for Representative Ron Marlinet, who was the congressman from the Eastern District from Scobie. And, you know, back up until the early 90s, Montana had two members of the House of Representatives. And so you had, you know, Ron Marlinet, the rock-solid conservative from the East, and then you had Pat Williams, the Democrat, more union-friendly guy from the West. And then, of course, because of, you know, the census and population, et cetera, Montana lost a congressional seat, and we went down to only having one member of Congress, and Williams won that race. And then, of course, Bill Clinton was in office, and then you had liberal judges like Don Malloy put on the bench, and so you started to see the slow destruction of our timber industry and a lot of these really union jobs, frankly. But Pat Williams, as I'm reading some of the news coverage here, he kind of straddled that fence of catering to the environmentalist base, but at the same time kind of placating the union voters by, you know, providing, you know, training assistance to workers who lost their jobs in these, you know, not just in the timber industry, but in other, more factory type jobs as well. And so that's how he was able to show support for the workers. Even as some of these policies were killing union jobs, at least he could say, well, he's trying to take care of the workers that lost their jobs. And so eventually, though, he retires from Congress, takes a job at the University of Montana, and I think the Democrats nominated Nancy Keenan, right? Or do we have to go back even further than that? Anyway, eventually, you know, Rick Hill becomes a Republican member of Congress, and then eventually Danny Rehberg becomes a Republican member of Congress at the statewide level. So Republicans have basically held that statewide congressional seat and now the two congressional seats since that point in time. But that seems to be the case to me, is that I think Pat Williams, you know, when he spoke to our college class back in the day and talked about Montana being a purple state, I think it was totally spot on back then. But now I think Montana has become a solidly red state if you can keep it. if you can keep it that way, right? In fact, I was thinking about this because tonight I get the honor of being the MC for the Montana Republican Party. They're having their big convention this weekend. And so I have the honor of emceeing the banquet tonight in Helena at the Civic Center. And so I was kind of thinking, you know, how do you kick off an event like that? And I think the way you kick off an event like that is welcome to the house that Trump built. Welcome to the house that Reagan built. Welcome to the house that Lincoln built. And as the Republican Party has been building upon these successes, I think that is what has now turned Montana finally into a solid red state. There were a lot of old school FDR Democrats, Truman Democrats, JFK Democrats who abandoned the Democrat Party for the Ronald Reagan Republicans of the 1980s. And anybody that didn't come across the finish line then, Donald J. Trump carried them across the finish line, especially in places like Great Falls and Cascade County starting in 2016. And so I think Donald J. Trump is the reason Montana has become such a solid red state by pulling those working class voters once and for all over to the Republican camp. Butte, major gains by Donald J. Trump, but there's still a lot of people that are just desperately clinging to the Democrat Party that has so abandoned the principles that folks in Butte truly believe in and stand for. But I think not only that, not only is this the house that Trump built, but I think on top of that, I just think that post COVID-19, you know, pre COVID-19, we had a bunch of latte liberals from Seattle and San Francisco invade this state, especially in places like Gallatin County. And which is why the Democrat Party, I also believe here in Montana, has abandoned private sector union workers, and they are just totally sold out for the environmentalist left. Because that's who now runs their party. It's the radical transgender activists. It's the radical environmental groups. It's the latte liberals from San Francisco and Seattle that invaded Bozeman and Gallatin County, and that's who runs the Democrat Party. And so, and then post COVID-19, what did we got? We got the freedom fighters, the political refugees, who finally had enough. They've been stuck in California or Oregon or Washington, and they've been seeing the left coast just break off and fall into the ocean, politically speaking, in like New York City style train wreck going on right now. And those political refugees were seeking freedom, and they were seeking like-minded folks, and they came to Montana. And even though it's created frustrations with growth and more, that has helped turn Montana into a solid red state. Again, if you can keep it, if you can stay united, and if you can maintain the coalition in the house that Trump built.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Population movement has been at the core of American history for centuries, yet many of us profess to be unhappy about it. To judge from the propaganda of political ads, those who stay put are to be celebrated, while those who have arrived elsewhere are not. Of course, the data show that roughly half of Montanans were born in other states, which makes it quite likely that many of the folks producing those cynical ads were born somewhere else as well. But behind these crude sentiments is the notion that new people, immigrants if you will, bring costs that those of us who already live here must bear. And that, as it turns out, is a question that lends itself well to analysis. Most of the research says that new residents add to the economic pie, especially when you take a longer view over second and third generations, and even more so with the tight labor markets of today. The worst case scenario, a new low-skill immigrant with less than high school education can have more costs than benefit, but if their arrival helps a business expand, the cost disappears. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. Most members of the U.S. House and Senate were nowhere near Washington when a gunman went to the homes of two Minnesota state lawmakers, killing two people and wounding two others. And that's exactly what rattled U.S. representatives and senators. They weren't in Washington. They were home for the weekend. Police accused Vance Bolter of killing Democratic State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband, Mark. Bolter is also accused of shooting Minnesota State Senator John Hoffman and his wife, Yvette. all at their homes. And that's exactly what rattled members of Congress. Consider why the Minnesota murders resonated so much on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers are scared of stalkers and others who routinely threaten them. But it's another level to target family members. Some politicians run for office to attain power, others for glory, and some for good old public service. Their families didn't run for anything. Their names don't appear on the ballot. They aren't on the wall in the Rayburn House office building on Capitol Hill. But the names and addresses of family members are on the Internet. And that's what freaks out lawmakers the most. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's time for your Daybreak Ag Report. I'm Russell Nimitz, and thanks for being with us here on the Western Ag Network. Well, on Thursday, President Trump hosted an event at the White House urging Congress to pass the One Big Beautiful Bill and, among other things, deliver tax relief, including the death tax, which, of course, has devastated rural America for years.
So you have a farm, you leave it to your children. If you like the children, you leave it. If you don't worry about the details. No, some people don't want to leave them. They don't like their kids, you know? Anybody in here not liking their children, farmers? But if you like your kids, you want to leave it. And a lot of times what was happening before I got there, because I put this in the first tax bill, as you know, but people would die, they'd leave their farm. There was no cash, but there was value to the farm, sometimes good value. It's called real estate rich and cash poor. And the kids had no money, and they'd be foreclosed out by a bank. They'd borrow money to pay the estate tax. You don't have to pay estate tax anymore. That's pretty big stuff.
Now, one of those in attendance was California rancher and NCBA past president Kevin Kester. And he told me afterwards it was an incredible honor to stand with the president and echo his message that America's family farmers and ranchers need tax relief now.
If this bill gets across the finish line, which I think it will, there'll be a baseline of $15 million per person for a death tax exemption, $30 million for a couple, indexed yearly. And so that is not full repeal, but it's a huge first step to provide certainty for farmers and ranchers across the country.
Meanwhile, House Speaker Mike Johnson says that the House will act quickly on the Senate's version of the Big Beautiful Bill and try to get the measure to the president's desk by the target date, July 4th. Stay with us for more Ag News right after this. It's time for Cattle Country Video's High Plains Showcase video sale. Tuesday, July 1st, over 45,000 head of fancy Rocky Mountain and High Plains cattle sale in Laramie, Wyoming at the Marion Rochelle Gateway Center. Sale kicks off at 8 a.m. with 35,000 head of yearling steers and heifers, followed by 10,000 plus calves and 270 bred heifers. Auctions broadcast live on YouTube at Cattle Country Video. Online bids on Cattle USA. To preview video lots, visit Cattle Country Video.
Hello, I'm Jody Drain, zookeeper and proud president of the Yellowstone County Farm Bureau. Being part of Montana Farm Bureau isn't just about meetings and policy. It's where leaders are made, friendships are formed, and big ideas turn into action. As a member, you help shape the future of agriculture. This June, we are getting together at our summer conference to tackle the issues that matter most to Montana farmers and ranchers. If you are ready to speak up and have fun, join us at MFBF.org/join.
Well, this Monday, the USDA will release its June 30th acreage and stocks report. And for wheat, they say it should hold the fewest surprises as it will essentially be the third revision from USDA, which began with the seedings report back in January, followed by the March perspective plantings report. Regardless, the average trade guess for total wheat acreage is 45.4 million even with the March estimate. If accurate, this stands as the second smallest wheat acreage total in the U.S. since 1919. However, despite the lower acreage, wheat production, they say, is still expected to run close to 2024's levels with a strong winter wheat crop expected this year. That's your Daybreak Ag Report for the Western Ag Network. I'm Russell Nimitz.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Benji, I think you're right. I totally agree with Benji in Butte. I specifically was asking our friends in Butte, but I want to hear what all of you have to think here. Yeah, of course, you know, sad news, the passing of former Democrat Congressman Pat Williams. Definitely our You know, thoughts and prayers go out to his family and friends out there. But Benji and Butte, I was trying to be nice. I was trying not to, you know, I was trying to think of nice things to say here. But I do think you're right, though, when we look at the record, when we look at the legacy. Benji says this. He says, I thought Pat Williams was a left-wing radical. I'm a Wisdom native, live in Butte now. He was certainly out of sync with most Southwest Montana values. Yeah, and again, me trying not to speak, you know, ill of you know, someone who recently passed away. I was trying to think of relatively good things to say here. But when it comes to his record, I mean, that's what stood out to me when I read some of these Lee newspaper articles and the Montana Television Network coverage is that he comes from this union, mining town of Butte, but when you look at the policies that the Democrat Party put into place in the 80s and 90s, vis-a-vis him, vis-a-vis Max Baucus, vis-a-vis Judge Malloy, vis-a-vis Bill Clinton, they destroyed union jobs. And instead of a legacy of saving union jobs, instead of a legacy of creating union jobs, you read, and it's actually more of a legacy of just managing the decimation of union jobs, managing the decline of union jobs. Kevin in Billings, what's your thoughts? Thanks for the call.
Well, I remember Pat Williams more as scandal, the SNL scandal, more and the post office scandal back in 1991. As I recall, a lot of those Democrats and a lot of those congressmen, they were handed brown paper bags and says, you're out. Unless you want to get exposed, and that's when Pat Williams quit. And then didn't Rick Hill come in with the Gingrich Republican?
You know what? I totally forgot about that. Yeah, and of course, a lot of that is missing from these, you know, biographical pieces that are in the Montana media right now. Which, if the tables were turned, of course, if it was a Republican who had passed away, I mean, they would no doubt include the full picture, wouldn't they?
Yes, because that was a huge thing back then with the post office scandal where they were borrowing all the money. I can't remember all the details, but they were borrowing money somehow through their campaigns through this thing, and that all got exposed. And that's when I think Pat Williams was told to quit or face the consequences, and that's when they all quit, and Gingrich came in with a Republican majority.
That's right. I remember there was a reason why he decided not to run again. And I remember that, yeah, you reminded me that there was a bit of a scandal there as well. And then I know there was a bit of a scandal when he had got hired by the University of Montana as well. Chuck Deneau, a friend of mine who's pretty well known in the Montana political scene now, you know, called out, you know, Williams and the University of Montana back in the early 2000s. I mentioned him coming to speak to one of our classes because here he got, you know, here as a member of Congress, you apparently, especially back then, got a pretty nice pension after being in office for 18 years. And then you get this golden parachute reward with this big salary to work for the University of Montana. And so that was a little bit of a scandal there as well. And again, not trying to speak ill of the dead here, just kind of trying to paint the full biographical legacy picture, right?
That's right. I just... That'll draw back some memories. I have to go back and revisit all that to see exactly what all took place. But that was a huge deal back then. Huge.
Yeah, you know, I should. I thought about giving a phone call or a text to former Congressman Denny Rehberg yesterday to kind of get his thoughts and give us a little more of the history here. Maybe I'll have to shoot him a message now because you're right. A lot of this stuff is being left out of these biographical pieces in the Lee newspapers and in the Montana Television Network. I know if Chuck Johnson, the longtime Montana political reporter Chuck Johnson, was still around, I think he would have probably painted a fuller picture. Hey, thanks for the phone call, Kevin. That was great. Tim and Savage sent us a great message on the Montana Talks app earlier. He said this. Let me pull it up here. He says, if JFK... Oh, JFK would be a moderate Republican today, and that's exactly right. Hey, Tim and Savage is also on the phone lines right now. Tim, thanks for the call.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, this is a follow-up to that last comment. Yeah, the Flakes were talking about it earlier this morning as well. And they referenced Judy Martz when she passed. And, you know, the Lee newspapers, they were all over it, making sure that they covered the good, the bad, and the ugly. And, yeah, she was involved in some questionable practices at the time as well. But you're not seeing anything in the media right now about Pat Williams and the SNL loan scandals or anything like that. So, yeah.
Good point. Yeah, I should.
More media twisting things.
I didn't even get a chance to go bug those guys yet over a cup of coffee yet. But, no, that's a great point they're making here. Yeah, Judy Martz. I mean, of course they had to had to bring up, you know, anything negative even after she passed away. And, you know, another Butte connection there, right? But no, a Democrat from Butte passes away. Don't say anything negative. Don't bring any up. But a Butte Republican like Judy Martz, when she passed away, they had to be they had to make sure they included all the negative in there. That's a great point.
Yeah, and say the reason I called you talking about, you know, and Williams, he did a great job. He bridged the two extremes of the left and walked that middle road and got the votes. Yeah. And that was something else that Reagan did as well with the conservatives. And I'm thinking about this upcoming convention where you're going to be speaking at. You know, the Reagan philosophy was the Big Tent philosophy. Is one of his famous quotes was, "If you're with me 80% of the time, you're a friend. You're not an enemy." And so let's focus on that. And thinking about who is going to be replacing Don Kay this weekend here. And my concern is that anybody who expects a litmus test for Republicans, or we need to purify the party or go hardcore one direction, we need to be more open and including the various viewpoints. I mean, I'm not as fiscally conservative as some. I'm very, very, very conservative fiscally, very conservative socially, but not to the extreme as some of the others might be. So does that mean I don't qualify? I mean, I should be booted? I think we need to take a more inclusive look at that. I hate to use that word regarding Republicans and conservative, but we do need to make sure that we're considering all viewpoints, and that's the strength of our party, is that we don't have to be in lockstep every single step of the way like the congressional Democrats seem to be. But I tell you, if you see that vote, the impeachment vote for Trump, that the left is splintering. They were not in lockstep on that vote, which was
amazing. Let them splinter. Let us stay united, especially heading into the critical midterm elections. Hey, I'll tell you what, Tim, hold that thought. If you can stick around, I'll come back to you right after the break here. Plus, we got phone lines open for you. Back right after this.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Yeah, phone lines are open for you. 406-294-0970. Haven't even organized my show prep here, but man, we have a lot prepared for you. Some great audio all around. One thing I'm going to save for Freedom Friday in the 8 o'clock hour with our friend George Blackard, General Raisin Kane, talking about the B-2 bombers returning home after that historic mission last weekend, striking the Iranian nuclear sites. That is must-hear audio if you haven't heard it. Great Freedom Friday coverage as well. So I'm going to save that and probably a lot more for the 8 o'clock hour of this show. But, great to get your insight on the passing of former Democrat Congressman Pat Williams here today. Because, like I say, I didn't really start diving into too much Montana politics. My grandma took me to a Lincoln-Reagan dinner in the 80s when I was a little kid. But other than that, I didn't really start diving into Montana politics until the late 80s, or late 90s, I'm sorry. So, appreciate Kevin and Tim for kind of giving some more insight here on Pat Williams. Tim, thanks for sticking around. And by the way, if anybody else wants to call in, we've got phone lines open for you as well. 406-294-0970. Tim, yeah, you mentioned the weekend Montana Republican Party convention. You know, the last I heard, there's four candidates running for chair of the Montana GOP. You've got in no particular order, Troy Miller, the Gallatin County finance chair for the GOP there, is doing a great job. You've got Stacey Zinn, the former head of the DEA. She's just a rock star, of course. You got Tanner Smith, who served, I think, one session in the legislature and then ran against Governor Gianforte in the primary for governor. And then Art Wittig, a very conservative former state legislator out of the Gallatin Valley. It sounds like all four of them are united, at least in one thing, that they did not like the disunity in the legislative session, and they did not like the fact that a handful of Republicans were voting against their caucus and voting with the Democrats on some of the increased spending. So it sounds like all four of them agree on that front. It's just a question of, okay, so what does that mean for the state GOP as a party next year, and how do you handle that type of a situation? So, but they're at least united on that front. Your thoughts? I thought Tim was sticking around. Tim, are you still? Maybe he's not there, unless he's on mute. I'm not hearing him. Okay, maybe we lost him. All right. You know what probably happened? He told me he's driving to Miles City, and I know there's a couple spots there. Actually, if he's driving to Miles City, I would bet $20. I would bet $20 right now. He got about 10 miles out, 10 miles west of Glendive, and all of a sudden, whoop, nothing until you get closer to Terry. When it comes to cell coverage, I've done that drive a few times myself. So anyway, but I'm sure he can call back in later if he wants. Although, maybe Freedom Friday, 8 o'clock hour, something like that. But yeah, he did tell me he was driving to Miles City. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Let me check the app messages here real fast. You can message us on the Montana Talks app. All right, let's see. Though when we talk about the Democrat Party right now and Montana being a solid red state, you know, and I mentioned how Williams, it seemed to me that looking back, he was able to straddle this unholy alliance of the Democrat Party, the environmentalists, the radical environmentalists, and big labor, the big unions. And that unholy alliance, I think, in Montana is slowly breaking apart because the government employee unions, like the public employee unions, have been stabbing their private sector union counterparts in the back. So that's broken apart that coalition, not fully, but a little bit. There's some friction there. And the environmentalists have totally taken over the Democrat Party. The unions really don't run the Democrat Party in Montana. They've essentially been run off of the party leadership stage, other than the government employee unions. You know, the radical leftists like Amanda Curtis, et cetera. But Williams was able to straddle that unholy alliance between big labor and big enviros. But now the enviros run it all. That's why when congressional redistricting took place and we gained a second seat in Congress, the Democrats, who controlled the process and gerrymandered the two seats, they were trying to figure out where to draw the line. And eventually they said, the Democrats said, well, we want Bozeman in the Western District. We want the big bucks. We want the latte liberals. We want the money. We want the high money crowd of our leftists in Bozeman. And the Democrat Party said, you know, we don't want Helena. See, Helena, they're kind of an older school Democrat, a little more blue collar. Even the government employees that live in Helena, they're not as far left as the downtown Bozeman crowd, right? So the Montana Democratic Party chose their path. They said, nah, we're going to carve Helena. Lewis and Clark County, you're going to be in the Eastern District, which is so solidly Republican, the Democrats don't stand a chance. We're going to keep Bozeman because we want the money. We want the big sky money. So they specifically chose the environmental big money crowd over the blue-collar, more working-class crowd. That's exactly how they designed that seat. I thought I was going to spend the bulk of this 6 o'clock hour here on Freedom Friday talking about this nut job socialist. Actually, he is a straight up communist. That's not just figuratively speaking. You hear people throw the communism word around all the time, and oftentimes it falls on deaf ears because people just think it's just overblown rhetoric. This guy is a straight up communist in New York City. And he's also an Iranian-style nut job with his Islamic radicalism. You know that crazy Shiite sect, the suicide bomber sect of Shia Islam that's in charge of the terrorists in Tehran right now? This Mamdani character in New York City, Sam Faddis, a former CIA operations officer, is reporting that that's the sect that this Mamdani character is a part of. But again, you look at all the crazy thing that Mamdani character in New York City stands for. He could just as easily be running for the Bozeman City Commission or the Missoula City Council and easily get elected, and it wouldn't surprise any one of you. And if he was in Butte, even though that guy, everything that guy stands for flies in the face of everything that the good people of Butte believe in, he would get elected. Because there's too many people that just still vote for the Democrat Party, regardless of how much they stab you in the back. And then they'd be flying that rainbow flag. Oh, wait, that's right. They're already flying the rainbow flag and poking every single one of you in Butte right in the eye. Because they think you're so gullible that you will keep voting for the Democrat Party, no matter how much they poke you in the eye. All right, looks like Tim and Savage is back. Hey, Tim, was I right? Did you get about 8-10 miles west of Glendive and boo, no cell signal?
Yeah, there's one or two more towers out here. That's all we really need. But yeah.
All right. Did anybody take my $20 bet? All right. Anyway, hey, what did you want to add? Hopefully, you're able to keep hearing what was going on.
I got most of it, Terry, but yeah, that New York just is a shock. I mean, 24 years is all it's been, and a complete shift. The same radicalism that took down the towers that killed 3,000 Americans, now that's who they want as leadership in New York City, which is just unbelievable. But so you were talking about Freedom Friday, and make sure you say good morning to George from me. But you know, another audio, you need to get Pete Hagseth in there, just ripping the media apart.
Oh, yes.
That's some great audio I heard yesterday. The whole administration is just doing such a phenomenal job and calling out the media for this BS.
Yeah, we actually do. I sent that to our producer, Caden. So we do have a couple of, we've got a couple of sound bites straight from the Trump War Room Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, basically telling the media, you have got to cheer against the efficacy of these strikes because you have to cheer against Trump. And then he slams the fake news. Maybe I'll play that in full later on coming up in the 7 o'clock hour of the show. And then George can weigh in the 8 o'clock hour as well. So, party chairman race. Did you hear my question on that front? Basically the point I was making is that all four of the candidates for party chair all agree that we can't have a handful of Republicans voting against their caucus and undermining their leadership. So I think they're all united on that front heading into this chairman race. 30 seconds to go. Tim, your thoughts.
Absolutely. And we need to have the unity, but we need to want that balance. And that's what Todd Williams did. Find that balance between party unity, being on the same page on the big issues, but not having a litmus test and saying that everybody has to be completely in lockstep. And with that, I've been so impressed with Stacey's in, and every time that she's come on the show, it just raises my opinion of her even more so. And I think she would be a great person to be able to find that balance within the party.
She's a rock star, that's for sure. Yeah. All right, Tim, great to hear from you. Drive safe.
Your morning espresso starts right here. It's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
Natasha Bertrand triumphantly claiming that the president's strike were not successful, did not obliterate Iran's nuclear sites. Okay, the same reporter who confidently authored the untrue story in 2020, Hunter Biden's story is Russian disinformation. Whoopsie daisy. The same reporter who somehow believed that actual Russian disinformation in the dirty Russian Hillary Clinton paid for dossier was totally legitimate. You know, an op-ed in the Washington Post accused her of bootstrapping the dossier into an MSNBC DNC gig. I mean, how this person has a job is... CNN earned their name, fake news CNN. They earned it.
The Sean Hannity Show from coast to coast later today.
Hey, Sean Hannity here. You know, crime continues to go up. Violence is happening in small towns and big cities all around the country. That means that you need something on you at all times. Now, Byrna, B-Y-R-N-A, they want you to conceal everywhere you go, and that's why they made their brand-new compact launcher, touted as the world's smallest, less lethal pistol launcher. Now, it's the same size as a smartphone with the firepower that you will need to stop an attacker right in their tracks. Now, it's equipped with tear gas and kinetic ammunition. It's designed to incapacitate any attacker for up to 40 minutes. Now, the compact launcher is perfect for women that want protection but don't want to carry a firearm. And if you're traveling this summer, well, Byrna is legal in all 50 states. Byrna requires no background check. It can be shipped directly to your door. And Byrna is proudly American. Each unit hand-assembled in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Go to Byrna, BYRNA.com today. Or try, before you buy, find a Byrna dealer partner near you. That's BYRNA.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunny skies across the area today, there's a slight chance for a shower storm in the afternoon. High temperature readings, meanwhile, range from 83 in Bozeman to the upper 80s in Billings. For tonight, with mainly clear skies, temperatures will drop back off to about 51 in Bozeman to near 60 in Billings. That will see partly to mostly sunny skies Saturday, with highs climbing in the low to mid 80s. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm Paul Trombley.
Hey, on Thursday's Montana Talks, in the 8 o'clock hour of the show, we caught up with Montana's U.S. Senator Tim Sheehy. Of course, we got his reaction to the Israel-Iran news, especially his insight as a Navy SEAL veteran. Then, what about the great news? The Trump administration rescinding the roadless rule. That's great news for firefighting. That's great news for public access and great news for making our timber industry great again. Again, full audio, download the Montana Talks app Thursdays, 8 o'clock hour.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Time now for a legislative update brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Here's President of the Montana Family Foundation and former Speaker Pro Tem, Montana House of Representatives, Jeff Laszlofsky.
Who is my legislator and how did they vote? Right behind who am I supposed to vote for judge? It's one of the most frequently asked questions we get at the Montana Family Foundation. And to help answer that question, we've released a legislative scorecard at the end of every legislative session for the past 20 years. And this year is no exception. Those who are interested can go to our website at montanafamily.org and download a copy of the 2025 legislative scorecard. In addition to the current scorecard, you can also download copies of previous scorecards to help you cast informed votes as legislators move up from the House to the Senate or even higher to statewide elected office and even in some cases to seats on the Montana Supreme Court. So what is the scorecard and how does it work? At the end of every legislative session, our team analyzes the complete list of social conservative bills that were considered and pick 10 to 15 that clearly represent a legislator's overall philosophy when it comes to our issues. In the case of this year's scorecard, we chose 15 out of the 53 bills upon which our government affairs team actively engaged. All of the bills represent our core issues of life, marriage, and family, religious freedom, and school choice. And that's an important distinction. We stay in our lane and try to be as objective as possible. Other groups focus on other areas such as the environment, fiscal issues, or Second Amendment rights. And we encourage you to check out those scorecards to get a clear picture of where legislators fall on the complete spectrum from liberal to conservative. In our case, the scorecard is never meant to be a gotcha piece. To maintain our credibility, we choose bills that give a broad, clear picture of where a legislator stands on a given issue. We never choose anomalous bills or bills that contain a suspect sentence or any vote on a bill other than the final vote of record or, in rare cases, a vote on an amendment that guts a bill or drastically changes its original intent. For us, the bottom line is to produce a scorecard that condenses an entire legislative session with regards to our issues and allows a voter at a glance to see whether a legislator is socially conservative or not. In some cases, the results are predictable, as in Republican versus Democrat. Democrats vote as a solid block because defectors are severely punished. In the case of the 2025 session, 77% of Senate Democrats and 93% of House Democrats scored a zero. The rest voted yes on one of our bills, which gave them a 7%. In the case of Senate Republicans, 60% scored a perfect 100%, with five more scoring above 90. That means three-quarters of Republican senators scored above 90%. The group that scored less than 90% was made up mainly of those senators that defected and began voting with the Democrats. Most notable was Senator Russ Temple of Chester, who scored 40%, the lowest of any Republican in recent history. On the House side, 52% of Republicans scored a perfect 100%, 73% scored above 90%, and on the low end, Representatives Julie Darling, Sherry Essman, Valerie Moore, Ken Walsh, and Georgia Melissa Nikolakakis of Great Falls all scored in the 60s. For more details and to see how your legislator voted, please go to our website at montanafamily.org and download your copy of the 2025 Legislative Scorecard today. For the Montana Family Foundation, this is Jeff Laszlofsky reminding you that this government is your government and your input does make a difference.
Contact the Montana Family Foundation at 406-628-1141 or on the web at montanafamily.org.
Wow, wasn't that interesting there from Jeff Laszlofsky? You think about some of those lawmakers who had such horrendously low percentages are Republicans who come from some of the most conservative districts in Montana. They can't even come up with the excuse, well, I'm in a moderate district, and well, you know, I got to go with my constituents. Chester, Billings, they come from some of the most conservative areas out there, and they were voting against some of the most common sense bills that were out there in the legislative session. Thanks, Jeff Laszlofsky, for that report. I would encourage folks to go check that on their website and hold your officials accountable.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
Population movement has been at the core of American history for centuries, yet many of us profess to be unhappy about it. To judge from the propaganda of political ads, those who stay put are to be celebrated, while those who have arrived elsewhere are not. Of course, the data show that roughly half of Montanans were born in other states, which makes it quite likely that many of the folks producing those cynical ads were born somewhere else as well. But behind these crude sentiments is the notion that new people, immigrants if you will, bring costs that those of us who already live here must bear. And that, as it turns out, is a question that lends itself well to analysis. Most of the research says that new residents add to the economic pie, especially when you take a longer view over second and third generations, and even more so with the tight labor markets of today. The worst-case scenario, a new low-skill immigrant with less than high school education, can have more costs than benefit, but if their arrival helps a business expand, the cost disappears. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.